Blog Talk Radio. Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever.
Well, good evening and welcome to Lenny Gottfried Straight No Chaser. Here we are for another evening of conversation. This evening is going to be extraordinary, I believe, because it's an examination, I think, of, again, the business part of show business. A lot of the times we talk about here in the arts the importance of people appreciating the arts, but also there is also a segment of the arts that we have to acknowledge that keeps the arts alive, and that's the business part of it. But before we get to that, I want to do the regular housekeeping that I always do every week, and that is telling you that you are listening to Lenny Gottfried Straight No Chaser on blogtalkradio.com/ S as in Sam, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H is in Harry, and the number 2. To also encourage those of you who are listening on your devices, if you want to call in and ask a question, here is the number. It's 1-516-453-6063. And if you're on the board and the board is beginning to fill up, thank you, everyone, for calling in and coming in, if you have a question, then it's up to you to press the number 1. That will give me the indication that you have something that you'd like to say. I will then be able to put you on the air, and both my guests and myself will receive you, and we will be able, hopefully, to answer or listen to any comment that you have. So that being taken care of, I want to thank you all for being so loyal and continuing to listen to Lenny Gottfried Straight No Chaser, because I know that they've been gaps, and that's because I've been really involved in a lot of different projects scheduled around this that did not give me enough time to do this in a proper way, and I didn't want to shortchange you in any way, so I only do it when I can hopefully be at my best. And that also means that we will be doing in the next couple of weeks a couple of shows. I have decided that I want to do a panel next week, again on educators, only because of something that I saw today and a discussion about the young teachers and how we are disciplining and having teaching moments with our young students. What are we teaching them? How are we preparing them for the future? So I'm hoping to get a couple of my teacher friends to come back. As all of you know, that's one of the things that I really wanted to be until I was a freshman in college. I was studying to be a teacher and singing on the weekend. And theater was not in my radar at all, and then it was introduced to me then. So it is very, very close to my heart. Now, saying all of that, let me get to my next guest. I have to say that how did I meet Miss Ann Dunning? I am privileged to be a part of a wonderful organization called the League of Professional Theater Women, and we are a growing organization. It is important that you recognize what is going on all around you and you try to adjust to it. And one of the things that we've adjusted in our agenda is that we wanted to go to someone who could give us a picture of how we can grow in a more positive way, how we can appeal to all of the young people who are coming in to sustain our relationships with our loyal members and to attract people in the middle. And one of the things that we've done was we went to a what I call an incomparable person who is like a consultant in that area. And her name is Ann Dunning, and I met and I am working with her. So I wanted you to know that that's how I explore. When I think about this program, I always think about what am I dealing with every single day that would be interesting to share with you as I go through being a thespian in this business with the different hyphenated positions that I hold. So let me tell you a little bit about Anna. I'm going to actually read what she's written because it's not that long, and then we'll find out more about her as we introduce her and she comes on the air. She is a principal consultant at Arts Action Research, and she became that in 2004. Her consulting practice with AAR is focused on strategic thinking, organizational development, research and evaluation, and facilitation to support nonprofit arts organizations and improve their capacity to deliver on mission. Prior to that, joining the AAR team, she was the administrative director of the Danny Grossman Dance Company, Toronto, which I find fascinating. That's something that we're going to talk about. She was the founding chair of the Canadian Dance Assembly, chair of the board of Dance USA, chair of the board of Free Dimensional, and served for 12 years on the George Cedric Metcalf Foundation Strategic Initiatives Advisory Commission. Here's where my fascination comes. She has taught for Hunter College's Arts Administration Program. Now I'm a graduate of Hunter, so we have something in common, and has been a guest speaker at the University of Toronto and NYU. Before becoming involved in the arts, Anne studied biology at McGill University in Montreal, where she received a BSc in Ecology, Evolution, and Behavior. She is our guest this evening. She lives in Boston and New York with her husband, Gary, who's president and executive director of Celebrity Series of Boston. With all of that being said, and it leaves me breathless, I would like to introduce you, my audience, to Miss Ann Dunning. Ann, say hello to the audience here.
Hi, everyone, and thank you, Lenny, for inviting me on and welcoming me.
Well, it's my pleasure. You know, from the first time that I heard you speak, and that's, I think, one of the engaging things is how you explain to each organization what their needs may be as you go through the phases. The first time I heard you speak, I found it fascinating that this did exist in our organization, that there was an opening to explore, you know, organizations for them to grow in a more positive way, not to stay stagnant, that for the growth in our society and our industry was absolutely necessary. So with that said, though, with all of those accomplishments, I want to go backwards. So I see that there are a lot of Canadian connections here. So tell me, what is your background? Were you born in Canada? Did you go to Canada? Tell me, Anne, all about you.
Yes, actually, I am Canadian, Lenny. I was born in Canada, in London, Ontario, and I grew up just outside of Toronto. So my formative years were all there in Canada. And as you read in my bio, I then had the chance to go and live in Montreal for a few years, where I did college at McGill University. And so, yeah, my early years were all in Canada, and you know, a great place, a great city, Toronto, to grow up in, and a very cultural city. So I think that very much influenced me. And I ended up coming to the U.S. in the early 2000s because my husband is American. And so that's what brought me to New York.
I see. So tell me, though, about this dance connection. I'll get, you've got biology connection, dance connection. What? Tell me about the dance connection first. Now, you've really been ahead of a lot of these organizations. You were the director of the Danny Grossman Dance Company in Toronto. How did that come about? Were you a dance student in school? Did you study as a child? What?
No, ironically, I fell into dance, really, in a sort of unexpected way, in that, you know, all through my high school and into college, I very much was fascinated and interested in science, and that's what I studied and sort of explored. And I realized at a point on that trajectory that the kind of research and teaching direction that science would take me in didn't completely sort of fill my need for and my curiosity about the world. And so I knew it wasn't the path I was going to end up on. And having graduated with this degree in biology, I got a job as a receptionist for a dance company in Toronto. And it dropped me into this world of these creative people, these choreographers, these movers who were so expressive. And it really brought awareness for me of the arts and the arts as a force in society, in our communities. I really did kind of fall in love with working in this environment of creative people and using what I knew of systems and organization and strategy that came out of that kind of scientific background to try and help them to, you know, sort of advance their work. And so I think I was a stranger in the world, but I immediately took to it. And I was fortunate in that process to meet a mentor, a woman named Jane Marsland in the community in Canada, who really took me under her wing and taught me so much about this, you know, sector and arts and culture. And I worked with her for many years, and that's really what became the driver of my dance life. That, you know, wasn't from the artistic side, but I very much, you know, felt at home when I arrived in the dance world.
How wonderful. So the dance world introduced you to the arts, and you could see, as we talk about here on this program all the time, the necessity of the arts in our society, how important it is, what kind of society we would be without the arts. So with that in mind, then how did that get you? You said you came to the United States with your husband, with Gary?
Yes, I came. Interesting. I met him at a dance conference. you know, this world, dance brought so many things into my life. He was at that time involved with an organization called Dance USA, which I had become involved in, very much like the League of Professional Theater Women, a, you know, service organization to support dance companies and creators in North America. And he and I met at a conference for Dance USA. He at the time was the executive director of the American Ballet Theater. And so he had a big, deep connection in dance as well. And so that, you know, that connected us, and, you know, as our relationship developed, I opted to come to the U.S. When we got married, and that opened up new doors for me in my career and my exploration about the arts and how I could contribute to a healthy and supported arts sector.
So did your thought about really advising companies and organizations start in the dance world and then veer into theater, or how did that happen? How did you start? Where did that start for you? Realizing that you had a connection, an administrative connection, a strong business connection with it, and had the vision to see that you could assist in the growth of an organization. When did that start for you?
So that, again, really was sparked by a person who came into my life who was a consultant, the founder of Arts Action Research, Nella McDaniel. And Nella had been working a lot in New York theater, long-time relationship with the Alliance of Resident Theaters New York. He and his then-consulting partner, George Thorne, were working with many theater, dance, music entities in all different communities. And they came to Toronto, and they started talking about this vision of sort of reimagining arts organizations, not as sort of mini copies of corporate businesses, but as these amazing sort of ecosystems built around the artistic process with the artists at the center. And I, you know, having worked with these artists in the dance world, really saw the value in that, really understood the artistic process as an amazing organizing principle and way of working, and really saw artists as complex and thoughtful and engaged people who had great ideas about how to move forward their work, but were often trying to kind of fit what they did into sort of expectations from the sort of corporate sector that didn't work with what they were doing. And so I really resonated with Nello's messaging. And when I came to the U.S., Nello invited me to come in and do some of this work with him. And it felt right for me because, you know, coming from that background of science, that sort of analytical, big picture thinking, I thought I have something to bring here in terms of like coming in and looking at these organizations and helping people to see what was there and how they might be able to transform that through, you know, the artistic practice and the artists who were at the center of and leading these organizations.
Oh, I see. So it's a whole different, like, I wouldn't say it's structure, but a whole different way, the way you view the focus is different. Then it becomes, it's less corporate focused and more talent focused, more talent focused than it was before. And I could see that would be appealing. So the journey that you took, so that introduced you to that. Then you came to New York. Applying all the, I can see now as you're thinking, you applied all the things that you learned, all the different things that you learned. You're studying biology at McGill, and also the evolution and behavioral studies that you've made. And then you started to applying them administratively to organizations. What made you, how did you create that, this structure that you have, this I don't want to call it an empire, but this business that you have where, you are, I will say to you, to my audience, it's hard to schedule Anne because she is quite busy. So it's no secret that what you do is in demand. How did that first start? Was it word of mouth? Did you start? What was the first project that you started with? Do you remember?
I'm not sure that I'll remember the exact first project, but I do remember at the beginning, the sort of seeds of the work for me were when I started, you know, being in New York, and, you know, I was really trying to get to know the arts community in New York. And Nello McDaniel, who had been working so much in the arts and I had a relationship with through the work he had done in Toronto, invited me to come in and, you know, sort of sit in on some of the conversations that were going on with some of the theater companies he was working with through the Alliance of Resident Theaters New York. Early days, I was, you know, sitting in on conversations there with groups like Elevator Repair Service, was involved, you know, Signature Theater, some of these companies that were part of the Art New York world and that Nello had been working with and you know, really helping them to sort of look at their strategy and their organizational structure and how they thought about that and how they could use their strengths of, you know, their artistic process and their deep relationships with their communities to really build their organizations and their work and support their work. And so very early days, I started to pick up some, you know, new groups that I worked with through the Alliance of Resident Theaters relationship with Arts Action Research. And that was what got me started. And it was such a great education in the theater in New York, because I really got to learn about many different organizations and who was doing what and what the history was. And so I was so grateful for that, those early days of my work in New York, really getting that chance to do that work. And then from there, most of it, and I will say to this day, most of it is word of mouth. I'm very fortunate in that, you know, people that I work with may go to a new organization and remember having done work with me and bring me in to work with them in the new environment that they're working in, or they may recommend me to colleagues who, you know, are struggling with some of the same issues to say, here's somebody who could come in and help you think about this. And so it's really been a great, you know, sort of almost family tree of networks of relationships that I've built over the years.
You know, I want to go back a little bit, because this, now that I know how all of that started in New York, let's go back to Canada just for a little bit. What was the thinking of your family when you were in school, McGill, studying biology and all of the subjects that you had to go with that, when you decided, you know, when you started to take a different turn? Are you from a family of a lot of siblings, or are you the only child?
So I'm a family where there are three siblings. I have an older brother and a younger sister. And so I'm right in the middle.
A middle child, yes.
And, you know, I think the interesting thing with my experience and my family, you know, my parents were incredibly open and encouraging to all of us in terms of the life path that we wanted to choose. And so, and also were really great at exposing us to many different things. And so, you know, as a child, I had many arts and culture experiences, experiences of, you know, different communities and cultures within the city in which we lived, which was a very rich city and in diversity and different cultures and opportunities, some travel experiences early on. And so they were, you know, my parents were very kind of cognizant of providing kind of a broad base of experience. And even when my path kind of jogged in a rather dramatic way, I never got the sense that they found that unsettling or concerning. I think they were always encouraging about the path and the direction and the passion and interest that I had really developed for this work. And so, you know, really gave a great opportunity. And I think, you know, one of the things I should tell you with my siblings, my older brother, his job is that he is a herald. He designs and grants coats of arms. It kind of gives you an idea of how open my parents were to kind of different career paths, because I think nobody would know of the career path of being a herald. And yet my brother became very interested in history and iconography and really studied and learned that and found this unique path. And now he works for the Government of Canada in their heraldry office. And, you know, it's an unlikely career, but one that has been very rich and rewarding for him. So I think an environment in which all of your passions and interests are supported can lead to some unexpected but wonderful places.
aren't you blessed with that? And, you know, I was blessed with a family that appreciated my passion. My father wasn't absolutely in love with my going into theater at the very beginning, but once I got a little bit more successful with it, he thought, oh, yeah, this is it. This is what she was born to do this.
Yes.
But, you know, but to be encouraged away from the norm, especially since what I wanted to do was such a normal, was such an accepted path. To be a teacher was an accepted path, especially in the culture, in the Black culture. That was, and still is, well, to a certain degree, it is a very steady, consistent job and respected job, not respected as much as we can. So when you do change that, to have that support is absolutely wonderful. And aren't you, your family is, your siblings are very, very fortunate to have had that experience, because not everyone has it, but my goodness, that is absolutely wonderful. So now I'm getting a picture of how you developed, you know, where you are now and how the embryonic stage of it and how it grew in to be now the business that you have. Without being specific, because, you know, I know that a lot of the things that you do are very very confidential things. I mean, you work for organizations and your conclusions are confidential to them. Your advice is something that is paired for everyone. What do you think is the state of the arts right now as far as how our organizations are coming along? Where are we? We know that the business in general is going through a little rocky time with a lot of different things happening. What do you think about the status of the arts where we are now in the United States as opposed to Canada? That's what I'd like to know. In the United States as opposed to Canada.
Sure. Well, I will say the first thing, Lenny, when you said, how do you think about the state of the arts right now, the first word that came into my head was turmoil. I feel like we're in a moment of turmoil in this sector, and I think that there's a lot of concern that I have about that. There are a lot of challenges around that, in that a lot of what felt secure to us has really been unmoored, and that is having some serious repercussions for our organizations, for our people. You know, the level of stress and burnout is very high because we're dealing with so many unknowns. We're dealing with, you know, coming out of a major societal crisis of the pandemic, but more than that, even a major disruption to the work that we do, which is directly connecting people with performance. And that, you know, was completely cut off for a period of time. And so there is a lot right now that I think is very challenging and is not going to get easier quickly. Is going to require us to really navigate some serious financial challenges, some serious relationship challenges in terms of building, you know, connections back with our audiences and our supporters in this sort of new world that we're in. Some serious staffing and human resource challenges. You know, the shifts in the sector took a real toll on a lot of people, and we lost people, good people, people who had knowledge and experience that, you know, is so valuable in our sector that is under-resourced in general financially. It's a tough time. It's a challenging time. At the same time, that unmooring of the things that we, you know, had stability in also presents an opportunity, and I think we can't ignore that. Because there are some things about our sector that have not been functioning well, have not been serving us, and that we have not found it easy to change because it's easier to stick with the status quo. And so the disruption of the status quo gives us an opportunity to make some change that we need to make, some change in, you know, how we think about the priorities, how we think about the resources that we have and how they're distributed within the sector. And so I think, you know, if we can come together and work together and navigate these challenges together, I do see that there's some potential for some very positive change in all of this turmoil. And that's, you know, where in my work right now, I'm trying to lean into those spaces and to those people who I see who really are ready to make those changes and to be part of those changes, and trying in some ways, you know, my work in the sector allows me in a way to be a connector because I work with many different groups and different parts of the sector, but really trying to, where I can, not work in isolation, but try and bring together some of those different pieces, because I think that the solutions, the ways of working that are going to serve us best are the ones that bring us together to kind of maximize our strengths and our resources and to, you know, sort of break down the ways in which we may have been, you know, working at cross purposes or, you know, working in isolation over the past, you know, 15, 20 years of the way that things have been structured.
Do you think that, you know, what is happening in our business is mirrored with what is happening? Oh, and I still haven't forgotten about that comparison to Canada. Don't think I have.
We'll come back.
I'm going to get back. Yes. Do you think that it is specifically in this country a reflection on what is happening in a societal way that we are I thought the arts used to lead our society. It used to set the standards. It used to set the style. It used to set our attitudes and our thought process. But it seems to me that we are now following what is set before us. Do you feel that way? Do you feel that we are a reflection of what we see in the news daily?
That's an interesting, you know, I'm not sure that I thought about it in quite that way, although as you're saying that and reflecting that, it's interesting to think about, have we fundamentally as arts and culture shifted from one role of kind of leader, you know, statement maker to more of a reflector, follower role? And maybe in some ways and in some cases, I would say I can certainly see that. And yet in other ways, in other places, I see such innovative drive within our sector, and we haven't always resourced that well, so it's often under the radar. But I think that impetus to lead, that getting out in front quality is still there in our sector, but maybe, you know, given the challenges of the time, given the resource inequities, we're not seeing it in this time as much as we may have seen it in prior times when there were greater opportunities to bring that forward. But you've got me thinking about that a little bit. That's, you know, I think I'll continue to, you know, contemplate that and think about how that really sort of positions in terms of society and the artist and the arts role in society and where we are right now.
I always used to think that the safe haven of thought and deed and creativity, new ideas, was the arts. That there should not, it was boundless, that there should not be any parameters, insane parameters. I mean, let's be reasonable. We don't want people shooting each other in the arts, but, you know, to prove a point. But that when you entered the arts, you left behind the parameters that the normal corporate world sets upon you, that certain kind of, not necessarily does your behavior have to be that different. We should all have professional behavior, but the limits of your thinking were limitless. You know, I remember being young and seeing on television something like a crazy show. When I say limit, it's a show like that came in America called The Outer Limits, and the ideas of people, the thoughts. I said, what kind of people think of things like this? But it's because they had no parameters. They could just go and think far out. And some of the work that I see, it is reflected in that. But some of it, or some of the thoughts that are being, I think, put upon our business are thoughts that kind of censor our creativity. And that's what made me think like that. But now I want to go back to what do you think, what's happening in Canada as opposed to what happens here with us? You've been now in both places, so talk to me about that.
So there are a lot of parallels, I will say, between our countries. There's a lot that is comparable in terms of arts and culture and the challenges and the way that it sits within society. It's, there's a lot of similarities there. But I think that the big differences have been, in my experience and in my career and work, in Canada, the government sees arts and culture and supporting arts and culture as more of a role that they should be involved in on behalf of the citizens of the country. And so there is a sort of mindset about supporting arts and culture in Canada that's slightly different, I think, than the way that, the government at all levels in the U.S. thinks about arts funding and supporting that. And, I think that there is generally a mindset of free market, sort of sustaining things in the U.S. that is much stronger. However, in the U.S., there's also enormous individual wealth and corporate wealth that ends up in these foundations that, becomes a significant part of funding, particularly the nonprofit art sector. The foundation sector is hugely involved in that, and that doesn't exist to the same extent in Canada. There are, private foundations that do make donations and support arts and culture, but there's nowhere near the kind of wealth there that is produced and therefore for given away through philanthropic foundations. And so in some ways, there's a kind of difference in that, like in Canada, the government tends to be the major funder and individual donors. And in the U.S., the foundations tend to be the major funder and then individual donations. And so you have to kind of translate a little bit in that way. And then, I think the other, big difference that I would say, between arts and culture in Canada and in the U.S. is that, I think there remains in Canada, I often talk about there's more of a societal mindset than a individual mindset, the sort of sense of the individual making their own way and, the self-made millionaire kind of sense that you get in the U.S. In Canada, there's a little more of a sort of sense of that society must support the community. And so there are safety systems within Canada, universal health care, unemployment, these kinds of things that make it easier in many ways to survive and create within the Canadian environment because you aren't quite so vulnerable. Whereas I think it's often very hard for like an artist to make their mark and to make their way in the U.S. where they don't have some of these support systems that are built into the sort of Canadian cultural and government context.
Hmm. Okay. It often is said that outside of the United States, there is a commitment in some of other nations from the government that acknowledges the importance of the arts, not just as a commercial success, but as a cultural success, as a cultural component, where, as in the United States, it is supported when you are more successful, when you are, and it becomes a commercial endeavor. And I've always wanted to get to have a fine line there where things that are maybe don't look like they are commercially successful but are necessary in messages and storytelling to be there and should be sustained, whether there is, monies from, as we used to call them, angels that have it. There should be in a situation where there is monies available when you don't have that contribution that can be sustained. And I think over time, WPA and all those organizations, a lot of organizations were created for that. They just didn't sustain themselves with it. And so we find ourselves right back at the beginning again. You know, over time and time, and now I'm going to say this. I'm going to say it to my audience because, all right, we're down to the 15-minute mark where you can call in the board is almost full. So if you're on the board, if you have a question, this is the time to do it. I know you're listening because these last few programs have been programs where people are introducing us to a lot of information that normally we don't really think about or are part of the conversation. And I think that we should be. The more that we know, we understand how we can develop our industry and become a part of it and not just, not attendees, but we want to be participants, as they use it in the webinar jargon. So I just want to let you know that this is a good time. If I see the number one, I will let you on the air. Now, to get back to my thought, over time and so many times, I am approached by young people who are interested in the arts, by the parents of younger people who say, oh, my child is, everybody's child is the most talented child in the world, and I respect you for it, and I believe some of them are really incredible. But we also know that the talent is not the only thing that sustains you in this business, that you really know. You have to really understand that show is a part of it, but so is business. Given what you see with the temperature of our industry, the temperature around us culturally, I'm always very, very careful in recommending students to this as an avocation unless they understand all of the levels that they need in order to sustain themselves, never mind the success that they want to do, just to be able to sustain yourself as a participant in this industry. What would you say to a young person now who said, given all that you've done over the years, who says that I'm interested in being a part of the industry, not necessarily do I have to be in front of the camera or in front of the lights in the theater, but I want to be a part of it. How would you then advise them to try to select a position that can sustain them for a long period of time? I guess that's what I'm trying to say. You know, how would you advise them in that?
So it's, this is always a tricky question in that, I look at how things work in the sector now versus how I came through. I took a job in an arts organization with a degree in biology. I had no training in arts management or, you know, no particular sort of skill set related to that work. And I was able to learn through mentorship and working my way up through different positions what I needed to know to understand how it all operated and, you know, brought the skills and knowledge I had from other places to bear on that work. I don't know that, you know, young people could follow that path anymore. I think that it has become more challenging to break into the sector. If you have a passion for it, you want to, you know, come in to this work. I don't think the doors are open in the same way they were in my experience. So that said, I do think that, you know, for young people who have a passion and want to be involved in this sector, a couple pieces of advice I would give. One is that you need to recognize that if you're coming into the sector, you pretty much have to have an entrepreneurial mindset. You know, working in this sector is not get a job with an organization and be set and have, you know, the security of your healthcare and your steady income, et cetera. There are very few roles that are going to give you that kind of a life, that kind of a career. And so I think you have to prepare yourself for a career in which you are going to need to be the sort of champion of your own path. You are going to have to understand your own needs and find ways to put together the pieces of work and engagement in the sector to make a career, to make a life from this work, the things that you're interested in. That, you know, I think is an important mindset to have. And if you don't feel comfortable, you know, sort of stepping into an entrepreneurial role, I think you have to really think about how secure you're going to feel within the sector, because I think it, you know, it doesn't offer a lot of stability or security for, you know, people coming into the field. I also think it's important, you know, what I found most helpful is to be curious and to try many things. And that's how you find out where you fit, what will work for you. And I think, like, just looking at what are the opportunities, what can I try, how can I get involved here? I've always found that those experiences where I've sort of said, I want to try something new and stepped out of my comfort zone and tried something have really helped me to expand and develop my skill set such that, you know, I don't do just one narrow thing. I have kind of a whole series of kind of strengths and capacities that I can lean on depending on where the sector is and what the needs are. And so being kind of a multitasker in that way and trying different things and building your skills in different areas, I think allows you to navigate the sort of changing structure of the sector better. And then all that said, I would never want to discourage someone from a career in this sector because, you know, feel like it has been such a wonderful path to take in life, and to work with creative people has been so rewarding for me, and to be able to contribute to organizations and individuals and their paths has been an amazing way to, you know, contribute and to have a sense of purpose. And so, you know, I do want to encourage young people, even though it is hard and you do really have to navigate a lot of this yourself, I think it's worth it. I would not change it for anything in my own life.
I listen to what you're saying. Oh, we have a hand. I listen to what you're saying, and I do agree with that path. I think information is so important when we are training or when people are coming into this, like in the NFL, when the young people that they have there, they explain to them how they want to be able to they can be successful in their careers, how to navigate their money, how to do their budgets, how to do all of these things, how to make longevity out of it. But I'm going to go now. There's a question on the board, so I'm going to now let this person come on. And please introduce yourself. And
hi.
If you have a question.
Can you hear me?
Oh, hello.
Hi, this is Mamie Duncan Gibbs. How are you?
I'm fine, Mamie. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm more than a dancer. This woman has had a career in the dance world for many decades. She is a person who is, I think, innovative and entrepreneur, whole spirit, and I follow and inspired by her. So Ann Dunning, Mamie Duncan Gibbs. There you go.
Hi, nice to meet you. I'm loving this conversation. Because you're showing another side of the arts. And so many times people who love the arts, they might not have the skills to be in front, to perform. Mm-hmm. But you're showing another side that they can still contribute to the arts and make such a huge difference. So thank you so much for sharing this information as far as what you've been doing. But, one thing, and I was sharing this with my daughter, I said we have to remind our young people that anything worth its weight in life is hard. So it's important that you find something that you're passionate about, that you feel purposeful, and work hard at it. Because even if you don't do well, you're going to be working hard not doing well. So I think it's so important to find something that gets you excited about getting up in the day. So, but this is a reminder that there's so many aspects to the arts, and all of us make the arts important. And without one, you can't be successful without the other. So I think it's so important that you showed another side of it and how important it is for the arts.
Thank you. I love that word purposeful too. I think that a life of purpose is, it is hard work, but at the end of the day, it's such a driver, and it is so rewarding to have a life
exactly.
that is purposeful.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think passion, one of the things that I listen to when people come up to me and they say, well, I think my child likes performing. I said, well, come back to me when you say that, when they tell you that they can't live without it. And mm-hmm. then that level of passion will then drive them and keep them to the point where they will keep on striving. I said, this is not a business of hobbies. And there are many things that you can do where you can be involved in it, but not keep it as an avocation. But those of us who do it for a living, there is a dedication and a calling that I believe
yeah.
that we all follow.
I can't imagine doing anything else, and I tell people that. I said, is there anything else you want to do? And I talk to young people, and they'll raise their hand and say, yeah, well, I was thinking about that. I said, well, then do that. And they go, what? Mm-hmm. I said, if this is not something that you have to do, that it just burns inside of you, that you have to get up and do it, then I don't know if it's for you, because it's very difficult. And if you don't have the passion and the purpose for doing it, you're going to give up easily. You're not going to stay, you're not going to hang in there. You're not going to put the work in, because you're going to think, well, I could always go do this, that, and the other. When there's nothing else you want to do, that's when you know you're in the right business.
Well, I have to say, I'm going to plug this for Mamie, because she would never plug it for herself, Anne. Mamie is preparing now to reappear on Broadway and on Chorus in a show that she did. How many years ago was that?
31.
31
wow.
years
ago.
In the same role, looking exactly the same, I want to tell you. I want to just say. She
well,
and two wonderful other actors, dancers, performers are going to reprise this role in February. And it is an absolutely Jelly's Last Jam that was created with, of course, one of the loves of my heart, Gregory Hines, at the time, long time ago. And I congratulate you, Mamie, because you have been tireless in your pursuit of performance as an art and your dedication
oh, thank you.
To give back. So, I in class, I keep on saying I got to say this in class, and I always have to get off and go to a meeting,
Right.
I want to say it on the air. I do want to give you that.
Thank you so much. Well, I'm excited, and I've always loved that role, and when I heard it was coming up, I thought, I can't imagine anyone doing it better than the three who originated it on Broadway. And the other two women, Allison Williams and also Stephanie Pope, they were so amazing in the role. And I just thought, oh, my God, if I could get them to agree to do this, you know, can we really pull this off? And we're all excited. And we've all been in, you know, a part of the arts all these years. We've been doing other things within it. But I think we're in a better place than we were even 31 years ago to help tell the story. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, I think it's wonderful. Go, Anne. Go, Anne.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I was just going to say, I think it's amazing to come back to that role and to bring everything you brought to it, but more now, because you have all of this experience and this life to bring to it that's happened since you first did that role. And I think that will be incredible how that layers on top of the original interpretation of the role and makes it even richer in this,
right,
in this version.
That's exactly what I'm thinking as well. So
yeah,
I'm really looking
forward to it.
I'm excited.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. I think the industry is excited to see what you all will do. Well, I'm going to say now that we're probably down to the last minute or so of this show. Thank you, Mamie. Thank you so much. Thank you for more than that. Thank you for being my inspiration as well and making me stronger than I was a year ago. So thank you. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And we are going to transfer now to our webinar where people can see us talking and then get a little snippet of what we've talked about. And I want to be able to say thank you to the audience in these last few minutes that we have. I want to say thank you to you on this radio program. Thank you, Mamie, for always being supportive, Mamie Duncan Gibbs. But also all of you who are supportive, who are on the board, but, you know, I see your numbers. I don't necessarily know your names unless you call up and tell me those. Thank you for all of that. And thank you for doing what you do, because it is saving a piece of our industry one project at a time. And that's needed. It's absolutely needed, because we all need guidance. So we'll continue this conversation on the webinar. I invite everyone. The address is there on Facebook, on the Facebook page. The webinar link is there. Please join us. And if you just want to hear again some more what we're saying, you don't have anything to say, really, you're welcome to join us then. And with that said, Anne, I'm going to let you say goodbye to this radio audience, and then we'll say hello to the video radio audience in a few minutes. Any last words, Anne?
No, just thanks so much for having me as part of this conversation. It's been a delight to talk about this, and so glad that your listeners joined for this conversation.
Well, yes, I'm very proud of them. They're great. They are great listeners, and they're great participants. And so I thank you all. Thank you again for tuning into Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser. Again, I am going to have that panel next week. It was supposed to be the captain of the strike from L.A., but I'm going to hopefully he can reschedule for the week afterwards so we can talk about, I think, the teachings that need to be done in this industry. So with that said, I'll see you next week. I'll see you next week, and I'll see you all on the radio. Thank you for listening to Lenny Godfrey, Straight No Chaser. Thank you now.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever. In the morning, fever all through the night. Listen to me, baby, hear every word I say. No one can love you the way I do, 'cause they don't know how to love you far away. You give me fever.